comments on CeroTalk Tech Chats are those of the individuals and do not represent CeroTech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. Welcome to the latest CeroTalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of CeroTech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft. And welcome to CeroTalk Tech Chat 94. It's CSUN 2011 highlights and disappointments. Our guests this evening are Jeffrey Stark with the Citizens with Disabilities of Ontario, located in good old Canada. Hello there, Mr. Stark.
Greetings, Mr. Law.
Very good to see you tonight, sir.
Oh, I'm excited to be here.
Also joining us, Daryl Shandro with blindaccessjournal.com and a few other portals as well. Thank you for joining us tonight, Daryl.
It's an honor to be on the show once again and to chat with all of you about what happened at CSUN this year.
Well, what a great segue. Let's start off with talking about what was new that really got your attention this year. And I want to start with you, Jeffrey, because you mentioned a few things in the chat the other night I never even heard of. So talk about what you see.
It's a busy, busy time, right? So actually, I saw a bunch of really interesting products. I'd say probably top of my list was I got to meet Steve and Josh from Touch Graphics. They make a lot of the tactile talking stuff. And I love the fact that Josh, actually, when he introduced himself, he says, "I'm Josh, and I'm a scientist," you know, like the Bill Nye of the blind community, right? So essentially, he had a really neat talking tactile tablet where you could essentially put pages into this thing, and it would recognize where you touch, and it could be used in an education setting. So they had a whole Braille literacy program that you could buy from this thing, and as you scan through letters, it would recognize, you know, what you'd find letters, and you'd tap it, and it'd say, "Yes, you got the Y," or "No, you didn't get the Y." I actually got to play Snakes and Ladders on it, too. I mean, come on. That's got to be the coolest thing. So they had, like, an audio, tactile, interactive game of Snakes and Ladders on this thing. And then the other product that they had, which I saw a prototype of it 2 years ago, and they finally got it to market, is the talking tactile pen system, where you have a pen and a tactile graphic, and you use your one hand to feel the object, and the other hand you touch with the pen, and it first tells you what the object is. So I looked at the anatomy of a cell, and it told me I'm looking at, like, the cilia. And then I tap it again, it tells me what that thing does. I tap it again, it gives me even more information. So you can kind of feel around on the picture, because, I mean, I'll be the first one to say, I'm generally of the opinion tactile graphics suck. They provide very little information without a real good understanding of the way things are laid out or presented, but by having both the physical exploration and the touch of the object, you really get kind of a neat experience.
So what about the tactile world? Did you see this kind of combo Braille / tactile graphic representation of the screen that folks say you could use for playing games or just kind of finding out where toolbars are and which things are underlined and so forth? Did you see that over at Booth 58 as well?
I actually didn't get a chance to see that. How about you, Daryl?
I didn't see that one either. I unfortunately missed that one. There were almost 800 exhibits. So, wow. I have been hearing about it this week, and I'm like, I'm bummed out I missed that one.
Yeah, every time I went there, it was busy, quite a line of people, or they weren't available there, and which is another topic we'll get to, that second exhibit area shortly. But we did get a pre-CSUN interview with the developers of that. Basically, I'm told the technology, Mike Calvin mentioned it's been around for 4 years, but they're finally at a point of looking for funding, you know, and we may be talking anywhere from $500,000 up to really $3 million to fully roll this thing out. But cool concept, so we'll just kind of see what comes up with it, but I like the idea of actually being able to get tactile representations of what is on the screen. So before we move on, though, I'm going to go back to you, Jeff, because I think the other day you mentioned about five things. So is there anything else you want to mention that's new that maybe wasn't in the show notes that I showed you earlier?
Well, in Canada, one of the biggest challenges we have is that English and French is viewed on par, so you get a lot of documents and material in more than one language. Like, even if you just grab a cereal box, you have both English and French. You have both English and French instructions, ingredients, and all this. A company called VisionAid had a neat product there that They had both a reading wand, which is a little like the iPal or a little like the Pearl. And they had something called the Read Easy, which is a little like the iPal Solo or the, like, those were the two sort of everybody had one products, right? Those sticks with cameras on the top or your camera-based OCR system. What they did different from everybody else is they do language detection. So you could have an English and French document, and it would switch back and forth throughout the document based on the language of the document. So you had English, French, Spanish, and German all in the same document, and it, you know, switched between languages. So I thought that was really, really neat.
Oh, and if that was smart enough, if that would be smart enough to say in a PDF document with multiple languages to actually separate the documentation, the English and the French, apart from each other, that would be just awesome.
Mm. Well, it definitely speaks it. So as long as you understand it, you're fine. If you don't understand the second language, you're in trouble.
Right, or if you could tell it. But this is OCR. It's not any PDF capabilities like that, right? This is strictly just scanning.
This is strictly an external product as far as I saw, you know, so yeah, that's about as far as it goes. In the low vision side, yeah, I saw a very nice, very small portable CCTV or magnifier about the size of, I don't even know how small to describe it, kind of the size of a half a pack of cigarettes. But when you get the small ones, you often don't get the clarity or picture quality. And this one actually had a fairly decent camera in it. And we actually were able to pull it away from the picture and still be able to read right down to 1x level of magnification with an inverted picture just fine. That's something called the Mano, M-A-N-O, which is a type of portable magnifier.
Okay, anything else you want to mention? Now, you told me to specifically to ask you about some enhancements coming up with BlackBerry.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say it's an enhancement so much as, you know, a lot of us have been waiting for the Oratio on BlackBerry, and Humanware's always been playing catch-up and catch-up again, and I think the thing that I came away with from the conference was that they're all in a holding pattern. They're waiting to see what RIM is doing. So anybody who's waiting for an accessible BlackBerry might be waiting quite some time because RIM has actually changed the platform in which they develop their products. I gather it's a QNX or QNC type programming environment instead of a Java-based operating system. So on the playbook, and their question is, are their BlackBerries actually going to do the same? And what does that mean for accessibility? So I think it's definitely an interesting challenge right now for those of us in the corporate space that need it.
Yeah, do you really need browsing support in the corporate space?
Not so much. Not so much. I mean, you need email, you need document reading, you need the PIM type stuff more than anything else. It's a really nice to have web browsing piece. I definitely miss it from using things like the iPhone or even the more recent mobile accessibility stuff, you know what I mean?
But it would just seem with things going cloud-based that really for ultimate accessibility with, be it BlackBerry or Android, that you'd really need that web browsing component.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, one of the big buzzes at the event certainly was a lot of talk about Code Factory's mobile accessibility and a lot of folks going back and playing around again in the Android space. But to stay on track here, I'm going to go to Daryl and give you an opportunity to talk about what caught your attention at the event this year.
Well, some may be surprised about this, but you know, I really like Bookshare's Read2Go app. It's actually been sent to Apple. It's awaiting approval, so it'll be up on the App Store any day now. Read2Go, and there is a. I wanted to make sure and bring it up because I heard in the beginning of the conference some of my acquaintances that I hang out with were saying, hey, you can't read the books with voiceover. You must use the a cappella speech voices that it comes with. And that is not, in fact, the case. I spent almost half an hour with Laura Long over at Bookshare at the end of the Bookshare party. It was cool because I also got to see an iPad, which I hadn't gotten to see one of those before. That's pretty awesome.
Was it iPad 2?
It was an iPad 1. It was not the 2, but I had not seen an iPad in any form before. I'd only seen the iPod Touch and the iPhone, so that was a good experience for me too. But if you use the a cappella voices and you're a blind user, It's going to, things are going to be difficult because, you know, Apple does not really give developers a lot of direct control over the gestures. So if you want to navigate, the navigational controls are on the screen. You can use them. You can double tap them. They are accessible, but you're going to have to find them on the screen and, you know, double tap them. So that's going to depend on how comfortable you are with learning exactly where things are spatially on an app's screen and then going right to them and double tapping. That's going to determine how successfully you're going to use the a cappella voices with Read2Go. But if you just want to read with VoiceOver or you just want to read with your Braille display, you can turn the a cappella speech off and just go for it. It's a window and it scrolls and you can read by words, lines, or characters or headings and so on and so forth. So really, you know, and it downloads the book straight into your iDevice from Bookshare. There's no need to hook it up to iTunes to transfer them first. And, you know, fortunately, most, you know, since the Bookshare books are Daisy text, fortunately, most of the files are going to be small enough where it's going to be practical to do that, to let the app go ahead and download the books and let you start reading. So it's a $20 app. You know, so some will say that's kind of expensive, but as soon as it hits the store, I'm going to get it. I'm a pretty big Bookshare user, and I really like Bookshare, so I'm going to do it. And I think that was there were some other innovative things that I can talk about, but I just wanted to make sure to cover that one.
Yeah. So, are any of you excited about the kind of announcement of Looktel? Of course, I mean, their money identifier itself for iOS for $1.99, but just their mention of what they're working on, this concept of coming out with a true product identification system that will go beyond using barcodes and actually by using multiple databases and storing it on the phone. So even if you're not connected to the internet, you would have the capability to do product identification even from pictures. So even if you had a can of Coke or a Lion King DVD, it could actually see the front or back of that disc. So if they deploy this correctly, I mean, this could be a tremendous, tremendous boost in our ability to do a wealth of different product identification.
I already have that. I have Omobi, which I love, by the way. I understand that this is, you know, slated to be even potentially even better than Omobi, but I really, really, you know, I got the iPhone, you know, shortly after it came out, you know, end of June of last year. And of course I got it because it was accessible and I was having trouble with my Windows mobile phone anyway. And, you know, I really wanted to get an iPhone because I wanted to have a fully accessible communication device in my pocket. But then a short time, like a couple of days, I think it was, after I got my iPhone and started working with it, I got this free app called Omobi, O-M-O-B-Y. And I started using it. I'm like, okay, this is really the killer app. This is why I got an iPhone. Because what it does is it lets me snap a picture of an object. It goes out, looks in their database, see if they have it. If they have it, they tell me what it is. If they don't, they go out and they crowdsource and they ask a bunch of people on the net, what is this thing? And somebody from there tells me what it is. So, and I understand the Looktel is going to be sort of an expanded view on that concept. And certainly if it can scan faster than Omobi, then, you know, and is real time instead of taking the still picture, yeah, then it could be better. But I'm, you know, I'm excited about that. But I'm happy, but what I'm finding in Omobi is already revolutionary. By the way, the Money Reader is freaking awesome.
Oh yeah, I mean, that was fantastic. I hate having to deal with all green money. I have a little bit of sight, so I see the colors of Canadian money, but American money's all green. So without something like that app, I'd be completely sunk.
Well, that would have been a good segue to my other one here on U.S. currency, but I. Oh, so much good stuff. I do want to mention this because you played with it, Jeff, and you were walking around with them, and we actually did some testing, and I played as well with the Ambutech, these new eyeglasses. That's the letter I. Everything's I these days. These eyeglasses that supposedly let you go up to 3 meters away. With us, it was about 1.5 meters or about 5 feet before it actually quit vibrating to let you know that you were going to run into me. But this concept of wearing these glasses that give you mobility, the ability to sense things for your upper body, like overhanging tree limbs and maybe poles and things that you might miss with your cane.
Posts that the, you know, signs that may stick out. Or I thought it did a fairly accurate job. I mean, I agree that the sensitivity wasn't quite to the level that I would have liked, but we were doing tests and we had our eyes closed and we were walking up to people and we were stopping a good arm's length away from them, which to me is just fantastic. I mean, They should. They said, you know, we started with what the RNIB asked for. We were looking for a specific set of sort of requirements. The next version may be lighter. It may have, you know, it may have more than one color feature for the lenses, and it may have a higher level of sensitivity. So, you know, as a first product out the door, you gotta, for $130 some odd, you gotta give them credit for putting together something that that's functional, if not necessarily as attractive as it could be.
Yeah, did you have a... I have a problem with glasses, and I tend to want to fall down and sit on the bridge of my nose, and I needed it right up on my face and had adjustable arms on the side, but I couldn't make it small enough for my mug, which I thought my mug's a little larger than normal, so I don't know how someone with a really small face, if it would stay fitted there. Maybe there was something I didn't get.
I don't know. I got a big head, so, you know, it fit fairly well on my meatball of a head.
I think that I tried the glasses. They were a little, I found them a little uncomfortable, but definitely serviceable while traveling. I think overall they did a great job. I fear they might have made the mistake that a lot of companies make with these kinds of products, though, and that is that maybe they didn't pay quite enough attention to you know, how stylish these were and how, you know, how they need to be appropriate, you know, for men and for women, and how they need to be, you know, just because we're blind, we are blind, but we do want to use assistive technology, but we don't want to stand out even more than we already have to. So I'm not sure if they got that part of it right. Mm-hmm. I hope they sort of pay attention to that area and work on that.
Yeah, it kind of looks like one of those sets of glasses that you see some old folk wearing that are like just one big plastic box over the eyes. And that's for, you know, the senior citizens who need that level of light control. But I agree with you. It's not especially aesthetic, but it's quite functional. And I had to adjust the things at the back and pull them out a bit to make it fit properly on my face. But when it was on, you know, got to give my hats off to them. They had something that was quite interesting.
Now, Jeff, you'd mentioned earlier this kind of the new kind of combo OCR and CCTV. That seemed to be the new buzz. Taking the camera, like you said, with these cameras with the big arm and it comes down a little L-shaped. And, of course, Serotech, we were there as well showing our DocuScan Plus for PC. And, of course, we're finishing development on our Mac version. And for those who've been asking, yes, it'll be one price, $299. You can basically have multiple computers as long as you use it on one device at any given time. So, yes, you can scan on the Mac, then later go to work where maybe Windows is the only option and retrieve your documents and vice versa. So, but, you see, GW Micro had something there. I guess FS had a new product. Optilec and someone else, the name's escaping me right now.
The one that I mentioned there.
Yeah. I thought there was another one as well. VisionAid. I thought there was another one as well. But so anyway, that seems to be the new buzz. Yeah, that was kind of one of the new trends, without doubt.
And you know, you've of course got sort of the ABIC stuff that was kind of the trendsetter in here.
That's the one exactly. It shows on the screen now.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, you're right. That's who it was. It was ABIC. They expanded it to. They had a new item, not out yet, but. Right, it would actually show up on the screen what you were reading, and you could also use it as a CCTV in that sense, stationary, I guess. But so that seems to be the new rage. All from, don't quote me on this, but most of the few that I asked seem to come right in that $24.99 price range. So they all kind of...
2K to 3K seems to be where they're all trying to position themselves.
But it's interesting because they're looking at it like, okay, the market's tighter. We've got to give you more bang for the buck so that you'll spend it, but we still want to make a profit off it. So let's combine CCTV and OCR into one device, and a great use for cameras. And people say, why do I need a camera? I can do everything with my flatbed scanner. Now you're seeing the benefits of having that camera. And
it's fast. It is super fast. I mean, there's no comparing. You run OCR in any of their products, and they're all down to about 10 seconds on the OCR front. So, I mean, that's and many of them are much faster. So
I'm thinking with these, you know, as a Bookshare volunteer, I'm thinking about a system that's kind of expensive-ish, though, but I'd like to have an inexpensive system where I could just sit there and scan a book, you know, just boom, 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 scan all the pages in a, you know, like 10, 15 or 20 minutes and then let it do the batch OCR. I think we're almost there with DocuScan, but that would be awesome.
Yeah. Have you tried out the HoverCam?
Yeah, I got a demo. Mike gave me a demo of that on Friday. That was pretty awesome.
I thought it was very light, and it looks like it's in the right
price range in comparison to many. I mean, that's the advantage to going with some mainstream products, is that you don't end up with that same sort of $2,000 price range just for your camera feed, right? I mean,
yeah, the only downside, and it's nothing as far as usability of the technology itself, is just that if you travel with the device and you go through TSA, and I just probably with any of the cameras, you're either going to get offered a full body scan, or you're going to have to, you know, go through the fun with TSA.
But it's not something they're familiar with, right? And it kind of looks like a high tech baseball bat or a plunger or
goodness,
miniature plunger.
What are you doing with this device? It's like, okay, I know what you're looking for. It's right over here, you know. But
hey, look, it's got USB. Don't take my hover cam away.
So some new stuff in the GPS front. APH announced their PC talking maps. Would you pay $269 for something that lets you kind of virtually walk around in the community? Granted, they're, I guess, looking for O&M instructors and students and folks. Are you familiar? Did you either see it or at the APH booth or listen to the Blind Bargains interview? Where they got a demo of it.
I just don't see it as being compelling, but I mean, that could be just the fact that I just don't see myself using it. But, you know, what was your opinion there, Darryl?
I don't see it as being very compelling either, because, you know, what I have works. I have a free app on my iPhone called Around Me that tells me what's nearby. You know, I mean, my iDevice is really doing it for me. I really don't need to spend hundreds of dollars on extra GPS software anymore. Sorry.
Well, my thought is, like, put this on an iOS device, so I have that functionality. It had some cool features. You know?
Well, I'd love to be able to. It would be awesome to be able to virtually walk around, as long as the mapping data has enough detail to really let you do that. I mean, you know, Mobile Geo was supposed to have let you do that, and I had Mobile Geo, and I was never satisfied with the exploration feature in my copy of Mobile Geo. So, I would be a little skeptical about that as well.
Well, I mean, I do have to admit to missing Wayfinder access. I mean, I used to use that quite a bit on my Nokia phones, but, you know, I'd love to see a similar app on the iPhone or on the BlackBerry or on the Android front, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. And, I mean, it doesn't look like Geo's going to end up on any other platform. Sendero didn't seem to have it as a priority, and they are going to release a version on the Android, but it'll be the same as the version they have on the iPhone right now. So limited functionality and limited capability, and just enough to make you salivate for more.
But do you need, I don't know if either of you or anybody out here who's listening got a chance to catch my presentation at the tweet up, but, you know, I was even using the Maps app with Google Maps and the walking directions. It wasn't perfect, but it was a sort of a way of exploring.
It's adequate.
You know, I mean, but the thing are the specialized apps like, you know, Mobile Geo or SenseNav, are they really much better? I mean, I have to say, I'm not feeling like I'm missing much.
Well, the one thing they do provide is that extra bit of information about your surroundings. Like, you're coming up to a four-way intersection, and on your left is this, and on your right is that, and in front of you is this road. You know,
sure.
That kind of information is one thing that the mainstream apps haven't gotten to yet, but I think it could very easily be put into a simple app for the iPhone, and bam, off you go.
It'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
It'll happen.
Well, JJ and a few folks I know who maybe do more brailing were kind of excited about this the 6-dot braille labeler. Just the concept that you could just you know, quickly enter. Which I would be happy if they just made, you know, the old diamond labelers with the old metal instead of the cheap plastic, the thing would work. I had no problem turning the crank and paying a little less money for it. But cool concept, I guess, if you have to put braille tape and, you know, label a lot of things. But $299, but cool concept. I don't know if it's something I want, because now you've got...
It's too spendy for me, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I was really hoping for some products like 2 or 3 years ago that came out with the Jot-a-Dot, which I thought would be a fantastic braille labeling tool, but when it actually got into market, it didn't really produce sufficiently decent dots to actually be of any value.
Exactly.
You know? So, I mean, it's that difference between, if you're going to pay the money, you want something that's functional, that is going to be, you know, useful in many situations, and I don't know if $200-$300, if I'd be willing to pay that.
Dan, you had thoughts on the the forthcoming Orion. Of course, they were quite vague with me, gave a little more information to JJ with Blind Bargains about the basically the replacement for Level Star's Icon and Braille Plus. And of course, there were some prototypes floating around. The reference Orion is in Orion's belt, something that you could conceivably wear on your belt. At least the non 18 Braille cell version, and the Braille cell version was fairly small itself. APH had that.
It seemed like APH was more willing to talk about it than
I was
going to
say
actually,
the exact same thing.
I actually tried. My friend and I tried to interview Level Star. We actually kind of did some interviews of our own that are starting to come out, and they didn't say much. They didn't want to talk to us. So
APH were pretty open. They had it running on a phone, so you could kind of get a feel for what it would be doing. It looks like it's a closed shell, you know, in that they'll have a walled garden inside of which you can work. Maybe there will be a screen reader on top that to go outside of your sort of walled garden. The device itself, they had a little, like, mock-up of what the device would look like in kind of a plasticky type mold. So, I mean, it was... The smaller one was about the size of a Victor Stream, maybe a little not quite as wide, but and a little longer, but about that in general size. I mean, and so, they said it would have cell phone capability.
So they told you that too, huh, Jeff? Because we actually asked Level Star. They said, oh, we can't confirm or deny any cell phone capability. But APH is like, oh, yeah, it's got a 3G cell chip in it. I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like they're more excited about the product than Level Star.
Yeah, doesn't it, though?
Yeah.
Well, we mentioned earlier the Looktel currency identifier, $1.99. But, of course, one of the downsides is that you really have no way to know if the bills are counterfeit. Although I asked this gentleman from the U.S. Bureau of Engraving and Printing if perhaps we couldn't tell tactily, because he said no, but then he went on and saying they counterfeiters don't have access to the same type of paper. So I'm like, well, I think you just answered the question that I asked you. But
I'm not too worried, because does any other money identifier tell you whether it's counterfeit or not?
Well, did you actually go to the exhibit? And I guess I got screwed, because supposedly people got paid $25 for doing this, but I did interview them. But they were showing some prototypes.
That $25 was shredded currency, though.
Yeah. So essentially, they showed a couple different prototypes for putting tactile markings on U.S. currency. And I think this goes back to a ruling that the ACB had established and won with the courts. But so they had real simple numbering, you know, 10, 20, 50, which was my preference. And he said most. And they had a kind of a fancier printing, which I said, no, this is too confusing. It's, you know, I have to really look at it a couple times to discern, you know, the 20 from the 50. You're getting too fancy here. And of course, so you had that on the bottom left, and then in the upper right, you had different markings, which I didn't quite get the logic. I mean, some were just like plain circles, and some were a little fancier, and like the 100 had two, and then a big space and two. I didn't quite understand the logic of how they came up with that, but then also realizing that some folks might have neuropathy in their hands, that they would also maybe have some kind of coupon like we had in the States for the HD TV receiver boxes, so that folks who simply could not feel these tactile markings, they would actually give them a coupon and get a discount, so they could choose their own money identifier, whether they wanted an iBill or something else. But I don't know if either of you played with that. Any thoughts on that tactile currency? But especially you, Jeff, because you have something like that already in Canada. Does it work? Do they hold up? Does it wear out? How are your tactile markings?
Well, first, any Canadian can get a talking bill identifier from the Bank of Canada at no cost. So that's a good starting point. And then we talk about the currency itself. It has a Braille marking on it, and it has a unique color to it. So if you're a partial, you see that the $1 bill is, the $5 bill is blue, the $10 bill is purple, the $20 bill is green, the $50 bill is red, you know. So I think Canada's kind of got that side squared around pretty well. But our bill identifier could be a lot better. I would love to see the iPhone app recognize Canadian currency, because that sucker is fast and accurate. It's ridiculous. As for their currency system, the one that I was shown had the $1 bill had no marking. The $5 bill had one dot, the 10 had two dots, the 20 had three, the 50 had four, and then the 100 went wonky and had one on either side.
Yeah, I think it had two on either side, but it was no logic.
It didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, that's funny. I guess they realized because he never showed me a 1 or a 5.
Yeah.
So, like, what are you doing?
I did get my baggie of cash, though. They were giving away $25 in shredded money. So.
Oh, shredded money. So I didn't miss out anything. Just some of the crap I could have carried around. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, very interesting. Well, before we go on to some other stuff, I have to mention and see what you either experienced or heard through the vinyl grapes. There were a few unhappy campers at this year's event. I heard some rumblings about that, you know, the tour guides were limited to 20 minutes per person. There was a lot of complaints, and you'll even hear it in my interviews where you had a second exhibit area on the second floor that a lot of folks didn't know about. So at first the vendors were upset, and then by the time they start really promoting it and people start going up there, many of the vendors had packed up and left. But what were some of the negative rumblings that each of you kind of heard about this year's event?
I didn't really experience anything negative. I have to say, I interacted with a number of volunteers, and nobody told me that they couldn't spend time with me. I had to go around the exhibit hall and pick up a whole bunch of stuff for somebody, and I spent probably a good 30 minutes or 35 minutes with one of the volunteers, and she was very nice, and we got that job done, and I found the volunteers. There were a number of volunteers just around the hotel, even in the evenings, and sometimes I was able to find one of them, and they helped.
The volunteers were great.
I guess the only negative thing I would really have to say was the service at the hotel and the restaurants. Now, it was great. Service at Sally's was great, but the service at the Grand Lobby Bar, where a lot of us hung out in the evenings, and, you know, we had a DC night out group on Wednesday night, and then my friends and I hung out with some developers on Friday afternoon, and we went to the Grand Lobby Bar. We had a meeting Thursday evening, and we did this a number of times. The Grand Lobby Bar was just very, very, the service was extremely slow down there.
Were you there last year?
No.
So you don't really have the comparison to last year.
Oh,
last year,
okay.
They had all the sessions. This is my one complaint. Last year, they had all the sessions in the Seaport Tower, or the bulk of them, which meant that the walkways were all straight lines. So you had a hallway you went down and doorways on left and right. They had like 10 rooms there. It was taken over by the dentistry conference this year. And so you ended up with sessions in all kinds of weird places. Like you had to go up by the pool outside the door and then go back in to get into like the a couple of the rooms and a couple of the sessions. And so,
yeah, that was
like,
kind of annoying, yeah.
There were a couple of my sighted colleagues were saying this year it was really a lot more people were lost because they didn't pick as good of a location in the complex. But, you know, other than that, my only other sort of issue on that front, I mean, I heard it all the time, was over the speakers. They were saying, please come up to the second floor and look at the extra exhibit hall. You know, they were trying with like, oh, Lady Gaga is showing is up in the second conference exhibit area. You know, they were desperate to get people up there. So, you know, I mean,
I never made it up to the second floor, actually. I didn't have enough time. So I'm sure a lot of other people had the same issue.
Yeah, so the vendors were quite upset. That was certainly one thing that came into play there. One thing that was mentioned was the release, and kind of went under my radar, was the release of the Blio Reader. But again, optimized for JAWS with the Windows Presentation Foundation. And at this point, indifferent, right?
I'm sorry, but I did a little story about Blio, you know, when it came out and it was inaccessible. And then, you know, I realized that just the number of books was not impressive.
Too little, too late.
I gave up on the Blio. Sorry, Charlie.
So they really missed their opportunity there. Really,
it's over for the, I don't see how they can.
I don't know how they can stay relevant.
Amazon Kindle and
EPUB being the, I mean, with Daisy going into EPUB, like, who wants this proprietary, you know, system for reading material that they didn't even think about accessibility? I mean, Kurzweil, they put Kurzweil's name on that. Like,
the National Federation of the Blind name is in it. Like,
and they released something that's not accessible.
And I'm even an NFB member, and I'm really upset about this. So
them getting it right a year, you know, 6 months later, like, give me a break. It was already too late, and now it's just.
Well, yeah, that's the horrible thing, right? It was obsolete when it when it launched. It was.
Mm-hmm. Everybody was excited about it a year and a half ago when we started hearing about it.
Yeah, someone tweeted Bleo, a national failure for the blind. I was.
Oh.
Oh man. But it is officially released if you certainly want to go and play around with it. And they claim it detects the presence of system access NVDA window eyes. And, of course, your mileage varies depending upon how you approach it. But it is there. Just let folks know about it. But,
now, I have heard there are scripts that you can get for window eyes. They're called Qt that add Qt support to window eyes. And somebody said that if you install those scripts that Bleo works a lot better. So.
Okay, I appreciate that insight, so folks are aware of that fact. Well, I've kind of went through most of the topics that I had here. I guess a good time to maybe open up for questions and see kind of what other people may be curious about. So, Jeff, I assume you kind of approach this. You attend a number of the individual presentations.
Oh, yes. So, actually, Nokia had a really good presentation, if nobody sat in on it. They have a indoor navigation beaconing system that they're trying to get into the Bluetooth specification. And they were doing a presentation on that technology where essentially it was down to a 30 centimeter level of accuracy within a building.
Wow.
Wow. That's like an inch.
Yeah. So like you could have navigation information, store directories or something tied to that. So, I mean, of all the presentations I sat in, that was a good one. The other good one I sat in on was related to the Wearabraille, which is made by that guy I mentioned earlier who introduced himself as a scientist. Hey, Josh. Essentially, you could, it's a glove that you can put on either hand, and we could tap Braille out on any surface, including the back of your head.
Wow.
Oh, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and then I sat in on a lot of the web accessibility stuff because that's kind of my professional interest and my area of most concern with the recent court cases and such.
Okay, so here is a question that I had that I never really got an answer to at this year's CSUN. That is, I'm working on a project with someone where we, you know, we have all these web accessibility standards and we have all these all this work going on. But here's the question: if you are building a website or you're revising your website, how do you know who to go to? What kind of a web developer / web designer is really qualified to make an accessible website or to turn an existing website into an accessible one? I never felt like
shameless plug. You can go to the CWDO.org website, so that's CWDO.org. We've got a bunch of online webinars that we've recorded. There's no cost of viewing them or what have you. And one of them was given by Everett Zufeld and Mike Gifford on how you go about hiring someone or how you go about getting an accessible web presence, as in what steps should you follow, how do you approach it, what kind of things should you be looking for, how do you evaluate those things, and...
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Shameless plug.
CWDO. Yeah,
we have the website.
Okay, thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, CWDO. So, I guess, now next year they're moving CSUN earlier, Feb 27 through March 3, and I would suspect that's in part to, there was a lot of interesting stuff going on, say, for example, at South by Southwest in Austin. Also some things, I guess, going on at TED, although I don't know anyone traveling over to Europe to participate in that. But so that's kind of cool. I think maybe next year some folks can, maybe go to South by Southwest. And
going
to
make it harder for college students who had spring break and were able to go this year.
Okay, that's a good point. Someone asked about the 6-dot labeler, and I would say go listen to the go to blindbargains.com/audio, and JJ had a good interview. Of course, those of you who have iOS, you can use iBlink Radio, and JJ gave us permission. We have a category called 2011 CSUN interviews, and so you have both the Cyril Talk and JJ's there, and he just released his final 6, and I still have about 19 to go, so I think when we're done, we'll have like 70, so... 45 up there now, and by the end of this weekend, we'll have all 70 ready for folks to enjoy. Let's see what our next question is here.
Hopefully, we can get the journals up there, too.
Okay, Ricky says, for Daryl, are there rate adjustments for acapella speech on the Bookshare app? If so, how does the voice sound at higher speed? That's one for the speed power readers here.
Ricky, I am going to disappoint you because I don't know the answer to that. I did not try to adjust the rate on the speech. I focused a little bit more on reading with voiceover. I will, how about this, everyone? I already planned to do this anyway because I had kind of promised the Bookshare folks that I would give them copious feedback, and one of the things that I promised is that I would do a podcast review of Read2Go. So when I do that, Ricky, I will make sure and hit on that point and check it out and see if, in fact, the speech rate on acapella can be adjusted, and if so, what it sounds like. And I know it has the male and the female. I think the female voice is Heather and the male voice is Brian, and I do believe there are might be some other language voices as well, so there's some selection there.
Here's a question from Tyler. He says that a few years ago, I heard that Ray Kurzweil was working on some kind of system that would take a picture of a room and orientate you to it. Anything mentioned about that? Let's see, son.
No, I
have no clue of such thing. Let's see what our next question is.
Tanya was a system by some guy out of Europe, which kind of does a little of that. But
what is it called?
Tanya, I think it's called.
Huh, never heard of that one either.
Yeah, there was a session on it. I missed it, but.
Well, this is an interesting question. Keith asks, when traveling in the hotel, did you have any trouble going through crowds or have any need for using elevators? Well, in a hotel, it's 40 stories. You're going to use elevators. But I think that raises...
The conference was on four floors. So.
Right. I think that raises a point that some people just maybe don't grasp kind of how these events work and kind of what's involved in attending an event.
Thousands of participants, hundreds of sessions, hundreds of exhibitors. And the one complaint I will say is that the escalators in that building are rather strange. They are not consistent as to whether the up escalator and down escalator is in the middle or on the sides. It's back and forth at the various levels on the floor.
Yes, and there was an open area where if you had your hand in the wrong place, it could have sliced off your hand. It's funny you mentioned that. I always
scary.
Keep my hand on the rail, but a gentleman had pointed that out to me, that there was a bad area there, and I thought, ooh.
Yeah, I heard about someone getting their hand kind of, not cut, but kind of squished or such. So, you know, I mean, everybody needs a little bit of adventure in their trip, so.
I don't want that kind of adventure, though.
Tyler asked about the big news with the GW Micro partnership. Well, again, it's their new, their CCTV with the Belgian company, whose name escapes me right now, but again.
It's a really nice CCTV. I have to give them props. I think it will do well. It's actually probably the best of the bunch on the CCTV front, as far as the ones that do OCR and CCTV together.
Is he also? There wasn't much to say about the breakup with Hims. Hims was there on their own, and you know, I have to say, and we can have this debate at some point or whatever, but. If I really had to go for a specialized note taker, I'm having to say that the BrailleSense on hand is looking pretty darn good right now for that.
Well, they just added Windows file sharing capability on the thing and social networking support, so you can tweet on the thing. So
and it works with the iPhone.
I think I would tend to say that they've got a couple of really good. Offerings in that space,
and it's stylish and fits in a purse or something like that too. So there's that those factors as well.
Yeah, we're getting some questions. I don't know any of us have expertise on the Braille Box Embosser, which I really didn't spend time with. Did you?
Yeah.
I can talk about it. The Braille Box Embosser is awesome. Actually, I just posted a couple of hours ago. I just posted an interview with Bjorn Lofsen with Index. And he demonstrated it to me. It prints 800 Braille pages per hour, and it only costs $13,000. Now, you might say, wow, that's a lot of money, but Braille embossers of that ilk have cost a lot more in the past. This is
like
a heavy-duty machine. I'm sorry?
I was just going to say, like Vision Q, I think they're the guys who make the Tiger there. They have a new printer, but it's like $30,000.
View Plus.
Yeah, sorry, View Plus. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, for $13,000, you get a printer that prints 800 Braille pages an hour, and it will print text and graphics. Mm-hmm. I actually did spend a good deal of time with them over at Index, so
Her concern was that it only does 37 instead of 40 characters. Is that a big deal? If that's so, 37 per line, I guess.
Something new. I didn't know that. I don't care. Who cares? Three characters? I mean, just an extra few lines. I don't know. I'm not going to get worried about that.
I'm pretty sure it's an inkjet printer, though, like a bubble jet.
No, wait. Are we still talking about the Braille box, or are we talking about the Braille and print? Because there's another device that American Thermoform is selling called the Braille and print.
Okay, well, explain that.
Okay, so that is a Braille embosser that also also includes print on the same page, right, along with the Braille. You see a lot of educational uses for that.
Yeah, so when you're asking about the Braille Sense Plus, are they doing enhancements? And again, I would encourage you to go listening to the HIMS interview that I did with Jenny Axler. So there are some...
networking, file sharing.
Yeah, networking, file sharing. So there have definitely been some enhancements to that. Also, one of the big things, some devices, PlexTalk and APH added wireless support, streaming radio.
Yeah.
I don't know if they did podcasts.
Give them credit.
Yeah.
You know, it's not compelling me. I mean, I've got OOTunes on my iPhone. It's like, I don't know, you know. Why?
I'm going to stick to my book sense, personally, but...
Yeah, me too.
My problem with PlexTalk stuff, and I haven't looked at the APH stuff in it seriously, so I don't have an opinion on it, but PlexTalk has always had a problem with their UI. I don't think they really understand how to make something that actually makes sense to an end user. I think they're stuck in that sort of, we like making prototype interfaces, but who cares if nobody can actually figure out how these things work in a logical way? You know, to me, that's always been the thing they suffer from. But I do have to say that the streaming radio capability, I think, will appeal to a number of people.
Yes, I guess they both do podcasts, APH Bookport Plus and PlexTalk. So,
well, and streaming radio. So, I mean, you can put in a URL for radio station, like the stuff from Winamp there.
But you have
Does
to
it have a directory also?
No, they don't seem to. The PlexTalk did.
See, that's you're like, come not on, really you know, workable
right,
then.
Right, build it out. Go get the directory. Well, even you know, APH, when I spoke to them, well, how do you get all those reading services? I go look for them. You know, I did it the same way everyone else does. I scour and go to each website and, you know, what
scour and scam. Yeah, scour and copy.
That's right. I'm not,
and then you
I'm not smart enough to code
it.
Screen scraping, so I got to go look through and...
Ew, screen scraping.
Yeah. We're down to about 9 minutes, so any other questions, folks, or any other important issues that you guys want to mention that we haven't touched on thus far?
All I will say is that if you have not put in comments on HTML5, blind people should definitely be aware of the fact that it's a fluid standard, which means it's not a standard at all. The browser manufacturers have co-opted it, so people who develop to HTML5 may be making some really junky pages, and it's something that the disability community and the company should be thinking about, you know, expressing their opinion.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, because you said you attended a lot of that on HTML5. It seems to be the new portal that folks are wanting to use for multimedia. But you have IE9 that's come out with no support for XP. You have Firefox released 2 days ago. Firefox 4, if you want HTML5 on XP or other devices. And at least a new beta of Chrome 11, Google's entry now with voice input support. And talk about that even carrying over to the Android, so that maybe when you land on an edit box, you can just give a voice command to say what you want to do next. So
that would be neat.
Yeah. Only problem is the browser manufacturers have co-opted the standard. So by being fluid, it can be different every single week or every single month based on what they like or what they don't like. And they believe that a tag doesn't have to be closed. So you can end up with some really junky code. Anyway, it was one of the biggest controversies. I sat in on four separate sessions that talked about the pluses and minuses. There's some great stuff in there, but there's some definite big concerns that.
Well, Tyler asks about, could you explain the new IP standard? I guess he's talking about IPv6 and maybe some backward compatibility issues that are going to come into play. Or did you talk about that, Jeff, in your...
It was totally off the radar of what we were looking into.
Right.
I don't really think that's related to accessibility, because that's going to be under the hood more.
What's that, HTML5? Or
no, IPv6.
Yeah, IPv6 will be something everybody deals with, really. Yeah,
Keith points out, Olympus recorders can be used to play podcasts. Well, we're aware of that. What we're talking about, Keith, are devices you can use to retrieve the podcast. They have wireless capabilities built in so that you finally can...
You never need to plug it into a computer after you set it up the first time.
Yes, iPhones and iPod Touches work quite nicely for that.
Oh, I agree.
With the podcaster client, too. The iPhone podcaster client.
Mm-hmm.
And Android as well. Folks like their automatic retrieval.
Oh, yeah. And Google had a big presence at CSUN this year. They were doing closed room interviews with both blind and low vision accessibility experts. So was I, actually.
You guys, I guess you're under NDA, so you can't talk about some of the things.
All I can say is they were very interested. They were very curious. They asked lots of questions. They wanted lots of feedback. And you got to give them at least props there because they were willing to take it on the chin.
And I would say that they made no promises about accessibility, but I would agree with Jeff. Google was very receptive. What I come out of it is Google was definitely in listening mode, and I felt like they were serious
exactly.
about listening.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good thing. We're down to 5 minutes. Let's see. We got another question coming in here. Speaking of Google and Android, what are your thoughts about the Orion? We did kind of mention it earlier. Did you actually get to play through the menus? You said we were saying that APH was a little more upfront about showing some things. I mean, what I heard,
they were controlling it, but they, at least when I had it, they were controlling it. They weren't really letting you do the tasks on the device, but they were kind of showing what it would be like experience-wise.
Right. It had like 9 main categories, and then the last one, you could do third-party apps, and there was about 50 apps. That's what I gathered. So it looks like it could be a pretty powerful configurable, but I don't know, you know, what you'll be able to include in it or not. And again, we got to see the prototypes of the... It was weird. I never saw a prototype of an 18-cell display. I kept trying to push something. There was nothing to push. It was all just...
Yeah, they only had the phone-sized one, I saw.
Oh,
did you see the 18-sized
one? Yes, I saw the 18-cell, yes.
I didn't see that one. I just saw the phone-sized one.
Yeah, me too. So I guess they were pulling one out and pulling out the other one just to see who got what as far as interest level, maybe.
But I thought that interesting concept, the Orion's belt, and that you could actually wear this like a pager but be a fully functional PDA. Mm-hmm. Was it that small, or do you think it was a little large for that? Or
no,
the Braille one certainly was.
It was the perfect. I mean, it wasn't much bigger than the cell phone. So, I mean, actually, you know what it reminded me of? Sort of a Nintendo DS, like a little tiny version of that. So, fairly portable.
Okay. Well, we invite you folks to, let's see, our next question here. Well, Pete Bosley says we can talk about IPv6 on another tech chat if there's enough interest. I guess maybe that question stems from there were some articles saying that it's going to cause some problems with existing technology. So I don't know if that'll trickle down to us, if there's certain routers that won't be able to handle it or if it's strictly. But we'll come back and talk about that and the significance of it. And I'd be okay if IPv6, can I have my own 24-digit number that I can use in any way I want? Probably not. It just doesn't work
that's that way. The way it's going to be. There are going to be so many numbers that my understanding is that it is going to be more like that with IPv6.
But there would certainly be some back-end infrastructure that would have to take place before you could just take your designated IP and use it where you want and say, look, this is my address. And we'll see how good people are, how many can remember their 24-digit number.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see what else we have here. And Tyler says, I'm glad Google's listening, but is there an accessible version of Google Docs yet? Was Docs anything mentioned?
No.
A lot of us
talked about Google Docs in our focus group, too, and we were talking about it from an employment perspective, and we were saying, hey, really, we feel like that's something you really got to prioritize because a lot of companies and educational institutions are going to Google Docs now for collaboration.
Yeah, it definitely came up in our space, too, so... I think people are definitely, I mean, Google Docs, Google Maps. I mean, there were a lot of interesting, the Android, you know, Android from the back end, their accessibility API, all those kind of things are on most people's top of mind right now.
So I want to ask what version will the Orion, what version of Android will it be running? And I think if you go listen to, the really best thing is go listen to my interview, which are very vague, and JJ's interview. They're being very tight-lipped about it, so there's just not a lot of details right now being set forth, you know, whether it'll be 3.0 Honeycomb or 2.3 or 2.2. We don't really know the answer to that one.
I mean, the one luxury they have is the fact that the only thing that stops handsets from being upgraded to newer versions of the Android OS is the fact that the carriers don't really want to go through the effort of upgrading it, and the manufacturers don't want to go through the effort of upgrading it because they'd rather sell you another handset. And I don't think we'll run into that with the Orion. So, I mean, there's the potential there for there's an upgrade path, because a Google Nexus phone can be upgraded right up the full line. So it's not really an OS limitation. It's an manufacturer limitation.
Oh, you don't think, right, the OS limitation based on the hardware?
Mm-hmm.
Someone asked about the recorders we use. I use the Sony PCMD50, and I believe JJ had the Olympus DM4, but maybe the 520. I'm not sure. So that's what we use for folks who are curious about such things.
I had the DS50 and the book stands for some of the interviews.
We're down our final minutes, so I guess we'll take final comments. I'll start with you, Jeffrey Stark.
Gee, I don't really. I would say it was one of the best conferences, CSUN conferences I've been to. I would say that they could definitely do a lot to further improve the service and inclusion of persons of blind folk, of partially sighted and blind individuals attending, such as having access to the PowerPoints or projection material in the event, and perhaps a bit more navigation information. But overall, I was quite satisfied. I thought there was a lot of interesting stuff on the go.
Daryl, your thoughts here?
I enjoyed meeting new people at the conference. I enjoyed I enjoyed hanging out with friends and longtime acquaintances that I don't get to see except online. And I enjoyed the exhibits and really did all of that and did not
tweet
even,
up.
Attend any sessions. And the tweet up. Absolutely, the tweet up. That was a lot of fun. The band was a little too noisy for socialization, but everything else about that was great.
It was better
than Bookshare party.
Yeah, I love those parties.
Yeah.
I understand. Has someone had free beer and pizza? Who said there's not such a thing as free beer? All right. Just sign right here. Well, thank you, guys. You gave some great input and a lot of things that we didn't cover in our interviews. No one person can absorb it. There's just so much going on. So, yeah, we'll see how it works next year by them moving the event earlier, or if that gives us an edge to maybe try to go to South by Southwest. No promises, no guarantees, but, you know, we'll see kind of what that may open up for some alternative. Just so much going on out there that it really takes a lot of different people to come out and report on all their individual findings. So, and until we meet again next week, stay connected
and stay directed.
This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.